Good morning. Well, we're going to change environments again. We were earlier in rice paddies and now in two arid systems, and now we're somewhere in the middle in Minnesota. So cropland systems, okay, so we're looking at cropping systems here, and it's quite different. But anyway, there you will see, I think, some connection to soil water dynamics and the vegetation community, just quite different system. So the vegetation that we're looking at, corn, soybean, and cura clover. So let me say a little motivation why we're looking at these three. This project started in 2004 when I was with the USDA ARS group in St. Paul, Minnesota. And at that time, if you remember maybe the news headlines around 2004, really the time in a very strong uptick here in the U.S. of ethanol production. It's really starting to ramp upwards at that time frame. And there was a lot of questions. There still are a lot of questions. What would happen to our cropping systems as we produce more and more ethanol? And, of course, in the Midwest, if you're familiar with the U.S., in the Midwest United States, primary cropping system is corn-soybean rotation. And so the speculation was that one of the first effects might be that some land that was in corn-soybean rotation would go to continuous corn production because they can make ethanol from the corn. So that was one speculation. And then the concern then is, what does that do for the environment? Okay, you understand we put nitrogen fertilizer on corn and we don't on soybean. Okay, so if we grow corn more often, we put on more fertilizer. So then we might expect that we'll lose, have greater nitrate leaching. Okay, so that's kind of the underlying concern. Will this move to ethanol lead to greater nitrate leaching because we're shifting land from corn-soybean rotation into continuous corn? That's kind of the path of logic, and it seems logical to expect that we would increase the nitrate leaching, and it turns out that we might not, and I'll try to show you why that might be the case, but I don't advocate continuous corn. But anyway, it's not as straightforward as it might appear. Okay, secondly, cura clover. What's that? It's a perennial clover that's native to the Caucasus region, and it's been used in the U.S. Ken Albrecht and others in Wisconsin have shown that you can successfully grow corn in a field of perennial cura clover. Much different kind of cropping system, and there's potential for lots of environmental benefits, which are yet to be quantified, but conceptually you can think of some environmental benefits that might occur if you can grow corn and produce it in a perennial legume. Okay, it's good for the soil, good for the water quality, especially if you're thinking about harvesting all the corn residue for cellulosic ethanol production, which is kind of the next phase that we've considered here in the U.S. So anyway, you see all this at some level sort of ties to the demand for bioenergy, biofuels. So that's why these three systems. Let me say a little bit about my co-author here, Rod Ventura. He is in the ARS group there, and he does really great work at this location on greenhouse gas emissions, nitrous oxide emission especially, but also CO2 emissions and methane emissions, and comparing these different vegetation treatment. So I saw an opportunity there to have an integrative study where we look at the effects of cropping systems on the nitrate leaching, water quality, water dynamics, as well as linked with the greenhouse gas emissions, to try to move towards an integrative environmental assessment of these cropping systems. Okay, still on the title slide. I removed the words, and I want to say a little bit about the plots. These are the plots where we were working. This is in southeastern Minnesota, and just a view of some of the plots. Each plot is about half an acre, so maybe it's like a quarter of a hectare. Okay, so they're fairly large plots for this kind of work, and there are three different vegetation types. So there's the soybean, corn, and cura clover. There's four different tillage treatments. There are two different nitrogen treatments. So there's a lot of stuff going on in the experiment. And some of this stuff is just gardens. Okay, so some of the plots are split. All right, well, I was grateful to hear Mike Young acknowledge his difficulties in working with a large data set, because I've struggled mightily to pull something together that I can show you, because the data set is somewhere between 5 and 10 million observations that we're working with, and I'll say a little bit more about the data later. But anyway, here's what I want to focus on today. How does the seasonal progression of soil water depletion vary across cropping systems with widely differing vegetation types? Okay, you have corn, that's a C4 species, okay, and then we have soybean, that's a C3, it's a legume, annual legume. Then we have the cura clover, that's a perennial legume. So very different vegetation types and perhaps different patterns of soil water depletion. And then how are the environmental impacts of the cropping system linked to the soil water dynamics, which is the topic of our symposium today? So those are kind of my focus questions. And ultimately, I decided I could probably only show one thing. So in the whole talk, I will get to sort of one point, I think, at the end. There's lots more to be learned from this data set. Just a little bit about methods. We used the equilibrium tension lysimeters that were developed with Chris Bry, John Norman in Madison. John Baker's also been involved some in the development and improvement of that technology. So, but the idea essentially is it's below the surface, about 1 meter depth below the root zone, and you every 10 minutes you measure the soil matrix potential, and then you adjust the suction in the lysimeter to match the soil matrix potential. You try to avoid flux divergence at the lysimeter. That's the idea. And it's done every 10 minutes. Okay, so you see we put the lysimeter in the plot a ways, and then we come back to the edge. We bring up the leads and so forth at the edge or the boundary between two plots. And we try to make this little cave, and we put the lysimeter under undisturbed soil, and we use some jacks to apply a lot of up pressure to get in good contact. So then we backfill and just perform normal field operations over the top, cultivation, fertilizer application, tillage, those sorts of things, and the planting, obviously, as you see here. So the crops just grow up normally. You over time, you can't see where the lysimeters are, but you know they're there. Okay. Let me go back a little bit. We also put in water content sensors. We use the Campbell Scientific 616s. We have around 60 of those at five different depths in the profile, thermocouples as well, all reporting hourly. Now it's been running for over 4 years. Okay, I'm just going to focus on this one small period of time, and it's 2007. I focus on the 2007 growing season because I want to show something about soil water dynamics. Okay, we have now our four vegetation types. Well, there was only three earlier. Okay, let me differentiate. The black line is corn following corn. So it's continuous corn. The red line is corn in the corn-soybean rotation. Okay, it's the corn phase of the rotation. It's present every year. And then we have the soybean, the dark blue line is the soybean phase of the corn-soybean rotation. That's also present every year. Okay, and then we have the cura clover, the light blue line. Okay, so you can see, so what we have now, I've integrated the soil water storage over 1 meter depth, and I've averaged it across three or four plots for each of these treatments that you see here. Okay, so that's what we're looking at, and the main trend I want to point out, it was a relatively dry year in 2007. A year that dry occurs about 1 in 10 in that environment. So relatively dry year, and under the soybean, there's about 50 millimeters less soil water depletion than under the other systems. Okay, so the soybean used less of the available soil moisture. All right, so we're going to look at that pattern in a little more detail. Okay, we look at it now by depth. Okay, where was it that the soybean failed to use the soil moisture that was available? Well, it wasn't at the surface. At the surface, under the soybean, it's a little bit drier. That makes sense if you're familiar with it, that it's the crop is planted later than the corn, And in this dry year, it developed more slowly. It had a lower leaf area index. So think of it as the inner canopy space, as Mike Young was showing earlier. So we have more exposed soil near the surface, greater evaporative losses in the soybean system relative to the other systems, which are shading the surface more effectively. So soybeans actually drier at the surface, but you see here at depth, here at 72 centimeters, likewise at 96 centimeters, we can show the soybean was much, the soil was much wetter under the soybean. So it's just not getting an aggressive rooting system down deep. It's not using that soil moisture at depth. Okay, well, soil moisture doesn't stay around forever. It's sort of a use it or lose it phenomenon. There's a temporal dynamic to soil moisture. And the unused soil moisture in the profile increases the possibility for subsequent drainage. And we saw that really clearly in the 2007 season. That's what I wanted to show you here. July through September, okay, July through September, a three-month period in 2007, we had about 37 millimeters greater drainage out of the root zone under the soybean than we did under the other systems. That's roughly the same size as the difference in soil water depletion that we saw earlier. Okay, so these two, I believe, are connected. I mean, it's logical that they would be. Let's look now at a longer time scale, now averaging across our 3 or 4 years of data. And now we have, again, the four different treatments here. And the seasonal drainage totals on average. Okay, so in the spring, we get some drainage from all of the systems. The best comparison I want to direct you to is look at the corn phase of the corn-soybean rotation versus the soybean phase. Okay, and you can see in the spring they are similar. Okay, not so much drainage in the summer. That makes sense. Crops are actively growing. Evaporative demand is high. But in the fall, we are finding more drainage under the soybean, okay? Just corresponds to less soil water depletion. You're going to get more drainage if you have a wet fall. So, and that happens occasionally, and on average, we're seeing in the soybean phase of the corn-soybean rotation something like on the order of 40 millimeters of additional drainage in the fall. Okay, so it's evidence that there's less water use, and it leads to greater drainage in the fall. So then we connect that to the environmental impact, which the only example I'm going to show is nitrate leaching. Okay, so now we have nitrate leached in the spring, summer, and fall for these cropping systems. And you can see some loss around 15 kilograms per hectare in the spring. Very little, virtually no nitrate loss in the summertime. Then we move into the fall. Now under the soybean, which is a legume, which is receiving no nitrogen input as fertilizer, yet it has the greatest nitrate leaching in the fall. And I'll argue that's most likely just because of the simple soil water dynamics of the system. Failure to use soil moisture at depth. Okay, maybe there's some, so the yellow bar in the fall becomes the blue bar in the spring. Does that make sense? Because it goes from the soybean year to the corn year. So maybe there's some carryover effect also on the corn in the spring. All right. Okay, so just this one point, I'll end with a hypothesis, okay? So the soil water dynamics and the environmental impacts are linked in this cropping system. Here's average annual nitrate leaching load below the root zone for the continuous corn, 34 kilograms per hectare, corn phase of the corn-soybean rotation, 31, soybean phase of the corn-soybean rotation, 45. So if you average those together, they come out to be 38. There's no significant difference in the nitrate leaching for the corn-soybean rotation relative to the continuous corn, which may be counter to what you might hear in the popular press or the general science discussion about the effects of bioenergy production. Okay, Cura clover, well, that's a beauty, and that's another story for another day, but of course very little nitrate lost under that perennial vegetation. So I end with this hypothesis that the low soil water depletion under the soybean is one factor that's preventing corn-soybean rotations from having lower nitrate leaching relative to continuous corn. So I look forward to exploring this data set more and sharing more with you in the future. Thank you. Well, I'm sure it was wetter than average. You can see there was a large rainfall event. The time scale is a little bit misleading here, but there was a large rainfall event in August, so we added 300 to four, so we added like 5 inches of precipitation in August. So that in one or two events, that's a little unusual. So I would say probably wetter than average. But this, so that one season had a wetter fall than average. But over three or four seasons, we see there is still an effect.
I see. That's a four-year average.
Yeah. Great question. Well, so by inference, then we find on average lower nitrate concentration under the continuous corn.
Yeah, it's receiving
more fertilizer. It's receiving exactly twice as much fertilizer, but we don't know how much nitrogen the corn soybean system's receiving, because it's a legume and we're not measuring nitrogen fixation. So, we don't know. Previous work, if I may, on continuous corn here's the confounding factor. What nitrogen rate would a farmer use on the continuous corn? We use the same nitrogen rate for corn in continuous corn as we did for corn and corn soybean. And it's been argued in the past that farmers would not do that because they give a nitrogen credit for the soybean. But Jim Sheffer's survey data shows that they don't. And they actually tend to use the same nitrogen rate regardless of the past crop. So. We cannot separate those, unfortunately. Yeah. Right. Yeah, that would be the way you'd have to skin that, is to try to do some N15 labeling. And so, yeah, I don't.
In this wet time, would you characterize the rainfall intensity as above average? Certainly, the amount was, but in individual rainfall events, was there always a higher intensity? I'm asking because I would assume that under higher intensity, potential for nitrate leaching is still lower because the rainfall would just percolate and doesn't take the nitrate out of the matrix that quickly. So it doesn't really leach it.
It was a mixture, okay? The first event, the event that sort of broke the dry spell, was certainly above average intensity. It was a higher intensity event, but then the subsequent rainfalls were not unusual. No, it's so, I won't call it a TDR probe, but you may, but it's this Campbell Scientific 616, but we made our own calibration, and they worked great for us.
Well, let's give a hand to all the speakers.